Greetings, everyone. Are you ready for an accelerated course in higher consciousness? This is how our global village will get ahead of the accelerated rate of change we are now seeing in the world. It won't be with the same consciousness that created the problems we see. It will be with a new consciousness that is now evolving with the angels of our better nature. Welcome to Cosmic Love. Have you ever considered what will happen when the language of cosmic love becomes common sense with a common language? Are you aware that this love language is, in fact, the learning process, the creative process, and the processes of consciousness at the quintessential foundation of self-governance? Think about that. Such a language of consciousness has the potential to involve and evolve our individual and collective consciousness. This is what cosmic love is all about, higher conscience. Give yourself a checkup from the neck up. What do you think will happen to your world and the world at large as we become more conscious of how we are conscious, both individually and collectively? I'll give you a big hint. Take a good look at the worldwide web of consciousness that the internet has created. Consider this new net reality for what it truly is, a global revolution in higher consciousness. The instant, everywhere, interactive internet has eliminated space and time. We're all connected in a global village now. All knowledge is at your fingertips. Knowledge power as never before known to humanity. But where's the cosmic love, you may ask? There's a new net reality shaping the consciousness of humanity. Freedom to know better and the opportunity to do better has far outpaced the ability of our core institutions to keep up with the revolutionary capabilities for all humanity. That's what the internet represents, the evolving consciousness of humanity, the collective consciousness of humanity, and the collective future of humanity. That's where cosmic love comes in. Any good metaphysician with his finger on the pulse of humanity could tell you that. If you step out of the box of contemporary groupthink and if you become an objective observer of the evolutionary ascent of net reality caused by the internet, you will not only see a huge wave of change coming, but also the nature of that change and the role that cosmic love will play in change events. There is a natural evolutionary path to these changes. Cosmic love is a blueprint for that change. It always has been. But humanity is just beginning to grasp the multidimensional consciousness required to navigate the vast, uncharted realm of inner space, the internet, at the heart of the internet. This is the new global village consciousness that is defining the collective conscience of humanity. Let's get real. Net reality is what we make it. Where do you think it's going? How do you think we'll get through the birth pangs of a new world being born? Are you ready for the next big thing in the computer internet revolution? Would you agree that the best way to predict the future is to create it? Cosmic love is the answer to these questions. All I ask is that you listen and learn. See how you can catch the biggest wave of opportunity in history. I'll explain how you can ride that wave for phenomenal win-win benefits for yourself and all humanity. Those hearing this are obviously computer literate, so connect the dots. Get a grip on the net reality of global connection with the benefits of cosmic love. Someone has to do it. May it begin with us, united sovereigns in a united state of cosmic love. Always victory when we love enough, keep the faith. Get the vision, embrace the virtue, make the vow, and claim the victory of cosmic love in your world and the world at large.
Greetings, everyone. This is Christopher Rudy. With Cosmic Love for the new year. This is our first show of the year, so Happy New Year, everyone. It's my pleasure to have James Kozlik on the show today. James is a permaculture advocate who applies these principles to community building. And we'll be discussing a model for local community building that works in any social network for a systemic paradigm shift. And I'm going to give a little bit of an introduction here before I bring James in. I do that so people still connecting to the show can come in more with James and what he has to say about permaculture, sustainable permanent culture, and community building, and that as a process that corresponds to what's biologically correct in the soil and with the land. There's a parallel process here with community building. We'll be going into that. So I wanted to kind of give a little orientation here to those who have listened consistently to Cosmic Love over the years. I've talked about the concept of universal law, language, this love model, and global telecom, telecommunications, this telecommunity. I've had some recent articles I've posted, those who follow the articles. So this will be kind of anchoring these concepts, stepping them down to earth today. James got his feet on the ground in a way that's practical, and I honor, respect. He's actually a neighbor, and I see his permaculture development on his property on a regular basis as I drive by. So I'm really fascinated with this. I know several other people in the area that are involved with this permaculture movement, and we'll be going into that. And this analogy of what's going on with the permaculture and community building, the parallel worlds here, and what's going on with community building locally and globally with the internet. You can see the analogy when you refer to or think of the internet, how it has virtually eliminated time and space with instant, everywhere, and interactive networking capabilities, which are really community building capabilities. So we'll be going into this, how mankind is awakening to awareness of ourselves as a family of man in a global village, and how local and global connection and interdependence is a fact of life. Almost half the world's 7.2 billion people are now connected with smartphones, tablets, laptops, and desktop computers. So ask yourself, is it true that global netizens now have a communications platform to get our act together as the family of man in a global village? And are you aware that we can now create a permanent culture, sustainable permaculture, of, by, and for all global netizens, all these online citizens, these netizens worldwide? And would you agree that humanity's conscious evolutionary ascent will make dimwit devolutionary descent obsolete? I am playing words there, but anyway, there's nothing more valuable than a vision for global telecom that has found its time. So with that little bit of an introduction, let me introduce James. James, tell us about your work with permaculture and some of the highlights of this work.
Well, I wouldn't know where to begin. I mean, in terms of permaculture, I haven't been involved too much, but a lot in the past, stuff that my wife and I have done is similar to the term permaculture. But what really attracted me more than anything when I read my first permaculture design book is the aspect of permanent culture and their motto of taking care of earth, taking care of people, and sharing supply. And without getting too political or anything like that, I really like that last part, is, you know, sharing supply, and I think that's where we can get into some of this discussion today about new currencies.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, and a lot of times, you know, I mean, the big thing that you really want to do, to me, is focus on where you're living at and the people that surround you and your neighbors, as opposed to going globally, thinking globally. I like to think more locally, I like to find a group of people with common ground that's easy to get along with. And I think that makes it a lot less overwhelming to develop a different modality where we're taking care of each other instead of having to drive 50 miles to go to work and make some money and worry about bills and this and that. So that's more or less where I'd like to take the discussion today.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure what you had totally in mind. I know you like the
I'm always taking it from the top, but you know, you have to build from the ground up.
Right.
And when you're talking about sharing resources, you know, the concept of taking inventory of resources, and you can't make things work until you know what you have to work with. So taking inventory of, you know, in a local area network, in a local community neighborhood, and what you have to work with, what do you have to share? You know, what gifts, talents, resources, you know, different people with different skills, and how that can, you know, lend to, you know, in a sustainable way. If we're talking about the ideal of community, you know, as it was 100 years ago with the Amish, you know, with their barn raising, or they're just, you know, just as a community, how they would, you know, take care of each other. And that concept of, actually, you had a radio talk show that you were doing on BBS, I believe, about a year or so ago, and you had some really interesting people on your show and different projects that they were doing. And there's a lot of movement, you might say, or developments with this, the concept of permaculture, which for people that don't know about permaculture, there's been a lot of permutations of the same word. You know, I mean, there was the organic gardening movement, and there was a biodynamic farming movement, and all these other movements were just basically different ways of saying the same thing, you know. And could you go into that a little bit?
Well, yeah, it's not like there's anything new out there. You know,
mm-hmm.
We're just repackaging things and doing stuff that was done hundreds of years ago. Just to give you an example, I took a great workshop locally here, Mona Lewis. I think you've had her on your show before.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic because it's all about building a pit greenhouse, and that comes out of the late 1800s.
The pit greenhouse concept, yeah.
The pit greenhouse concept went by the wayside once fossil fuels, you know, took over.
Uh-huh.
And then we didn't have to worry about heating the greenhouse naturally, you know, and then it was just like throw a space heater in the greenhouse and you're good to go. And electric or whatever else you can use, because the energy's there. And now we see how those resources are being overused or whatever, and there's a whole group of people that want to come back and hone in on the natural resources that we have. And
yeah, it's a brilliant concept. I saw pictures of that with some posts here this last month, and I actually went to the website and copied the whole website because of the concept of how when you dig a trench, so to speak, or, you know, a pit, and the ground temperature, 55 degrees, of course, radiates in from the sides and the bottom and warms it up to the point where it's not going to freeze. And with a little heater in there, you know, you can keep it to where, you know, when it's really cold, you can keep it from freezing. But the vegetables, of course, the composting, the things that can be done down inside of the pit greenhouse, to me that's a fascinating concept. It sounds extremely practical, a lot less expensive to heat and to build, actually, than an above-ground greenhouse.
And that's the point that I wanted to make, in lieu of what you just said, too, is that you know, I have nothing against technology. I think it's great.
Yeah.
But as our society moved forward, we learned how to do things faster and quicker, and it affected our whole being, our economy, our how we interrelated with our neighbors.
Yeah.
And now coming back to see how small communities operate, we've had communes and small communities are still dotting the country. Now we're getting into these transition cities, neighborhoods, and towns, and now the economy. You know, the 99%ers, without getting too political about it, they have that understanding that, hey, guess what? There's a big party out there, you know, to make a bunch of money and be rich. And guess what? We're not invited, you know, as George Carlin said.
Yeah, the 1%.
The 1%, you know.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Hey,
we've
got our
own
party going. We can start our own party, and a party where we take care of each other, and we don't have to go chasing the almighty dollar. Eventually, I think that's where we head into when we see some of these, like Ithaca dollars and Bernal bucks and whatever else is out there. You know, eventually that kind of currency changes into that love economy where you're just doing, you know, you're just assisting your fellow beings on this planet with whatever needs they have and vice versa. And it doesn't have to be reciprocal person to person. It could be reciprocal, you know, from one person to another person. And that's eventually what I think, you know, that the terminology that always attracted me in the permaculture, the first book I read the back end of the book before I read the gardening part. And it was because it was all about community and getting back to those values that we have rocked in our subconscious somewhere. And, we're wanting to get back to them. And it has nothing to do with survival or anything like that because, you know, that sends up those red flags of fear and we have to do this and we're against the government. And no, we just want to take care of our little neighborhood here.
I think the movement from virtual community to real community, no, we're pseudo community to the spirit of community, which is really spiritual. I mean, the real, you know, real unity and diversity is a spiritual concept where what goes around comes around. So, I mean, even if you're giving with asking nothing in return in real community, it comes back, you know. That spirit, you know, and I realize that's an ideal situation that our technology and our sense of separation, everyone in their own home, you know, even though they're networking far and wide, there is a sense of separation that's, you know, it's people living in the virtual community, more so, and it's kind of a detachment or a sense of separation in one sense. In another sense, a lot of people are connecting like they never have before with the sense of the 99%, whether politically, economically, or, you know, social. I mean, the concept of real community is out there within our virtual communities, and there is, a transformation going on, and there's a lot of people talking about, you know, what could be done in our social networks, you know, locally and globally to create social conscience, which is really social conscience with a capital C is real community. And in the meantime, I get a lot of emails, I don't know about you, and I try to keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on, you know, in all these social networks that I kind of key into that I think are related to cosmic love, you know, in a universal sense, you know, in planetary transformation and galactic alignment and the energies of the universe that's affecting the Earth. And, boy, the sun is just a lot of sunspot activity. And recently I got an article about some major solar flares that were, you know, just a few days ago that are aimed towards Earth. And it was talking about the Carrington effect and what would happen if there was a major sun flare like has happened here about 100 years ago that today would just pretty much knock out all communications, the satellites, personal computer chips, the computer chips on cars. And then when we'd be, you know, if that happened, we would be back into, you know, the way it was 100 years ago. And we would have to somehow resurrect, you know, what we did, you know, what humanity did 100 years ago to sustain, you know, real community. So I you know, like to think that, you know, that there's not going to be a severe disruption of civilization as we know it. But sometimes I wonder, James, if that wouldn't be a kind of a blessing, because a lot of this technology, you know, with GMOs and HARP and fluoride and chemicals and vaccines and stuff that's going on, I mean, it's like, stop the world, I want to get off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of people that feel like that, you know, I mean.
Yeah, and, you know, but,
I mean, I'm just looking at it as a form of a new passage, you know. Okay, I'm done, I raised my family, I
yeah.
had to chase that dollar, you know, and live that lifestyle for a while, et cetera, et cetera. And now I'm ready for Social Security, you know, I'm ready for not having to keep working. I mean, let's face it, you know, our economic system is kind of goofy, too. Here we
yeah.
are, all these baby boomers still hanging on to their jobs while their kids are unemployed. Now, does
yeah.
that make sense? We're not letting the new generation take over because of what? Are we fearing that nobody's going to take care of us, that we got to take care of ourselves? But when you look around, like in our little community here. Okay, who do we have here? You know, we have 80 late 70s, and then we have some baby boomers, and very few of the younger, our young children, you know, our 20s and 30-somethings, most of them are gone.
Yeah, and here in Montana, So
now when we look at our local community, how can we assist each other? Now it really does become a system of the heart, you know, soul to soul, heart to heart, where we're out helping each other, assisting each other, and we're not so worried about charging somebody for something that we do. I'm fortunate that I'll be brainstorming with a couple people in our community here, and that's where they're coming from. One guy is just all, you know, full of heart. He's got a huge heart. Another guy is just loves to serve, you know, and there you go. Now you've got the makings of starting a local currency that might not be a currency. It might be a trade system. We don't know what it's going to be yet. You know,
yeah.
like the LET system, for instance, that's out there. And, it might be a system where maybe we do use some paper currency just to get started so we can develop certain fundamental aspects of being able to be sustainable and not have to rely on, you know, silver, gold, and paper
yeah.
currency.
In other words...
So, you know, and that's one of the things, you know, in setting up a community, if you go local, global, or networking, well, really, you have to really start locally and real local to see who's around you and how you can interface with them, because somebody that's 80 years old isn't going to be able to do everything over the computer, so you might need a resource directory or some kind of a different system so we can stay connected with those people, and those older people might think, what do I have to trade? Well, they might have a lot to trade. They might have mentorship. They might be able to, you know, do certain things that are very valuable yet, even at their age. And so you don't want to leave anybody out. And again, that gets back to that taking care of the supply, you know, sharing supply, taking care of people.
You know, that reminds me, when you're talking about resource directory, it was... About 15 years ago, back about 2000. I worked with an individual to begin that the Natural Life Directory. And the vision of that originally was exactly that, how you create, this is a publication now that's actually Southwest Montana and different other cities in Montana receive this resource directory, which is largely holistic health, like a, it's a health directory, an alternative resources, tools, skills, people that have different services. And the concept originally was the Whole Earth Catalog, which is a book of resources and tools for building community. And of course, that was the vision before the internet of, the whole Earth Catalog was like taking the big picture of, global resources that are available for local communities. And I get, I always excited about, Buckminster Fuller, who inspired the Whole Earth Catalog, back in the 70s, that was a big thing, before the computer. And I went and studied with Buckminster Fuller, and when I moved out here to Montana with my family, I had that vision for years of how, for building a community, and I was thinking local in Southwest Montana, and it's actually gone throughout the state, and I think there's places in Wyoming that get the publication also. And the idea of there are people here, immediately local, but, all over this area that have all kinds of gifts, talents, and resources, tools and resources that, can basically, optimize health in different ways, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically. It's quite amazing, the different resources I, find in the directory, but my heart's been in that concept of community building for a long time, and I see some people here locally that are doing phenomenal things with their greenhouses and different aspects of permaculture and gardening, and I'm fascinated with some of the cutting-edge developments, with the drip irrigation that brings very unique nutrients, from worm farming and worm castings to worm tea, from their waste from the worms that are extraordinarily nutrient-rich and valuable for plants, and the symbiosis that goes on between all kinds of different worms, parasites, different bacteria, in the soil, and the healthy stuff, the good stuff that corresponds, in the soil, like you grow healthy plants from healthy soil, and you eat them and you have a healthy body, and it's like if you have healthy dirt in your gut, in your colon, the whole body grows out of the dirt, you might say, that's in your colon. And if you have a really good mix and balance of, the healthy, biological terrain in the gut, then it supports the whole body. And that analogy, it's kind of that common sense, is coming back a lot. I mean, even the concept of, why we pray before we eat a meal. Well, it's like, the solar plexus corresponds to your emotional body, and it's where your guts are. And the idea of a prayer is that if you center in your heart, and peace and harmony and calm in your body, your food's going to digest better. And it's the same thing, in the larger community. If there's a spiritual vibe in a group of people that have pure intention, for building community, for being a community, being in unity in a spiritual way, then there is that, it's like an unwritten law, love is forgiving, not forgetting. And there is that sharing with resources with pure intention, just to take care of others as you would yourself or your family, or, I think the concepts are universal. I think that's really, it's the golden rule law language for every golden age in cosmic history comes back to, you know, the education of the heart and basically a holy compassion or heart coherence that, you know, resonates with the highest and best interest of your neighbor. And I've been watching, you know, different people in this community, networking with others, with organic or permaculture gardening classes, and you know, support system with community gardens going on over in the village, and it's been really gratifying. Of course, this is going on now in the United States, like it used to go on, and actually still goes on in Russia, with people have to survive by growing their own vegetables, you know, or the victory gardens after World War II. It was the same concept, you know, or during World War II. So you might say we're in an economic downturn, to say the least, and a lot of people are getting into owning their own lives by growing their own food. So you've had quite a bit of experience with that, and you've actually had people come in your place, James, and work with you. How are you doing that with other people that come and visit and stay with you and work with you?
Well, it's actually pretty cool. We just started last year with the WOOF program, Worldwide Organization of Organic Farms. And even though we don't have an organic farm, we've got a lot of different types of plants and everything in there. We've got over 240 different types of plants in our little garden here. And, you know, we kept thinking, well, how can we get help? Kids are gone. It's just me and my wife. And our garden somehow keeps getting bigger, even though we tell ourselves, let's not do anything more this year. And so we connected with the WOOFing program. And what a great program that is, because we just had a couple from Belgium and then a young guy from California. He spent a month at the end of the year here, even after the gardening was done.
Uh-huh.
And it was so gratifying because we were able to share what we have, whatever knowledge we have, you know, and don't have. They were able to share with us their knowledge. And they're in their 20s, you know, mid-20s, early 20s. And it was so refreshing to see our interaction, you know. We were able to share a lifestyle with them. And it turns out, I felt like an educator without being a teacher.
Yeah.
And it was a real nice place for, of course, we have a great valley here for people to come to because there's a lot of other stuff to do. And it was an inspiration. We inspired them. They inspired us. So we have a little different setup here than what a lot of the woofers end up on a farm. And for however long they're there, every morning they wake up and they go pick grapes or do something out in the big, huge garden. And ours is a little different setup. So they were able to create different things. Like one gal created a strawberry patch and created a moss garden with a little makeshift pond to attract dragonflies and other insects. And another guy, he made a insect motel because he was tired of the ants that are around here.
Yeah.
And so now we've got a place where a certain type of wasp, he did all the research, you know. Our whole concept is deductive reasoning. So, you know, between the computer and all the resource books we have here, that's what they would do in time off. They'd page and go through that stuff, and they created, you know, different things. Same with the other guy that showed up was fantastic. He did not want to go back to school. The school that he was going to go to, he was going to psychology. By the time he spent a month with us, he changed his whole concept And he found a 2-year certified permaculture course at his school that he had enrolled in. And so he took that. I took him into town in the Livingston, and Sam Mascari there, he's doing a big aquaponics operation. And this guy, from reading some of the material, was really into aquaponics. And so Sam turned him on to this food hub in Denver, which is a big community-type garden, greenhouse, where it's in a bad neighborhood, and they're trying to show people and educate people how to sustain themselves with food and marketing aspects in the middle of Denver, and that happens to be where Jake was going to school. So he was able to connect with that food hub, so he'll be able to work over there and while he's going to school. And it's just fantastic to see that all involved, and same with the other two. The couple was from Belgium, were social workers, and they wanted to set up a homestead like ours and for assisted care, and they would be taking care of old people. Well, isn't it funny that here they are taking, basically, we said, well, that's great. We're, you know, in our 60s, so now you get to actually practice what you were going to do.
That's great.
And it's just, and yeah, and there's the inspiration for that. And with the community we have here, it's really interesting because, you know, really, if you want to start something, we've got a lot of great gardeners around here.
And yeah.
People that are doing now, if we can network that and start that as the first aspect of community sustainability and figure out some kind of a system where, you know, so we can see the parts of the community that doesn't have gardens, you know.
Yeah.
That's a nice start, you know. And then we could look at different things. We got contracts with so much talent. And the whole concept is to see what talent is around you and then utilize that talent to share with each other, and then you eliminate the use of money. So it's like the Venus Project. If anybody listening to this program, I encourage you to look up the Venus Project on the Internet. That's a group of physicists, very brilliant, intelligent people. But it's so basic of what they come down to. They have these beautiful plans for futuristic cities and technology that would just blow your socks off. But their basic premise is we don't need money. We have all the technology, all the talent right in front of our nose to live with a beautiful life where we can play more than we work. And work isn't considered work. It's a joy because we're developing this fantastic global, you know, organization, beautiful cities without money because we don't need it anymore. We've got everything we need.
What we have to do is
turn our consciousness, you know, around to where we're not in a survival mode. You know,
we don't
have to go out and get a job and make $100,000 a year to build.
Yeah.
We just have to turn our consciousness around and look what's around us to share and to work with each other to build.
So the currency of cooperation, it gets to the point when everyone's really working together. Some people are growing some food, some people are growing others, and they're just exchanging, you know. But it's just the same thing with building homes and building, you know, someone helps someone get their home up or their boat up or barn raising or whatever, and vice versa, you know, and everyone's taken care of. I mean, the Amish got along doing that royally for, you know, well, they still do. And it's amazing. Their lifestyle is extremely healthy, and they don't get diseases like, you know, most of the outer community does, so to speak. Well, they're healthier, number one, but they just, you know, they have a, they don't take all the, they don't take vaccines, so they don't have their immune system whacked at an early age. They do, you know, what I would consider what's biologically correct, and they have this thing with the soil. They don't use the chemicals on the soil. Or, you know, they're more into using fertilizer. The old manure spreaders, you know, that they used. My dad used to call them shit flingers, but, what they do is it's coming back, and it actually is just common sense when people really get into what's biologically correct in the soil for growing healthy plants or even biologically correct for their body. You know, they're getting into sustainability, whether it's personally or, you know, in their garden. And I see this as being kind of a resurgence of, you know, the common sense that became uncommon. And do you remember that lady that was out here, had the Encyclopedia of Natural Living, and she gave lectures in the community here? And it's
I don't remember. I was probably too busy chasing the buck.
Yeah. she was really amazing lady. She had raised about, I think she said, 7 children in an old farmhouse after her husband had died. And she got into, they were doing everything, you know, for, you know, to survive, when I say that, you know, for sustainability. And she published this Encyclopedia of Natural Living, which was all the stuff the old-timers used to do for, you know, making sauerkraut, you know, how to pickle everything, you know, how to grow everything from, you know, your garden to your animals, you know. I mean, common sense stuff that's been kind of lost. And it's a, you know, this whole Encyclopedia of Natural Living, it's like a big, giant, thick, about a 3-inch thick phone book, or 2 inches thick, something like that. And it was like a whole earth catalog kind of a thing, but it was very specific information that she compiled. And I think she, over the years, she did like 11 editions or 20 editions. I mean, a lot of editions, because it really sold, you know. And a lot of young people that are getting into this concept of sustainability and you know, working the land and just taking care of, you know, owning your own life kind of a thing. If you want to own your own life, you know, we don't get a lot of common sense stuff in school. We get kind of special sense or compartmentalized thinking, you know, with stuff that for a lot of kids is irrelevant. Then, of course, they squirm in their seats and they're branded as ADD and they give them a drug for it. Kind of world we live in now, but a lot of it was, you know, learning styles, you know, especially with young boys. You know, they're the ones that usually squirm in their seats because they're action oriented and they learn by doing, not by sitting there and hearing someone drone on about something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all this is, you know, there's a groundswell publicly, and it's not just in the United States, all over the world right now. And it's amazing how people all over the world are connecting with this ancient wisdom, I call it, or just classical wisdom, or just, you know, common sense wisdom about everything, you know, all these resources that are available for owning your own life and your own land and your own garden and your own, you know, just basically, you know, how to thrive with you know, more healthy living, you know, easier and faster. When I say faster, it's like you know, the concept is analogous to computers. You know, there, until you know how, with a lot of computer stuff, it's hard, but once you know, it's easy. And it's been kind of hard for a lot of people to shift gears and get into this, when I say back to the land movement, you know. It's really, there's been a subculture all the way through the, you know, the 60s and 70s that continued on. It really suffered during the 80s and 90s and since then, but it's really coming back. And it's a strong movement for people that get into it. And the Venus Foundation you mentioned, isn't that Jacques Fresco?
You know, I think so. I don't know. There's a couple of physicists, but I think you might be right. I don't remember the name. It's been a while since I've actually looked at their website and see what they're doing. But here's the thing I just want to get back to is that, you know, the key is taking the action. And I think, just like you said about the, you know, the young boys, you know, in school, they get restless because they're ready to do something physical.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the whole thing with developing, I can't say a new lifestyle, but developing a lifestyle that you would rather have, you know, choice.
Skills.
And if you have that in your heart that you say, you know, this just isn't working for me, I'm getting tired of working, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a new action I can take? And it's really overcoming all your fears and doubts and actually finding some like-minded people, whether it's one or two or just three to start with, you know, and develop something that might work to where you can get out of that treadmill of jumping in the car in the morning, going to work, coming back at night, and you're totally beat. So
I
think it's the key, though, is to take the action, to take the step, because we can talk all we want about all these cool things that are happening around the country and the globe and the world, but if we don't take the action right where we live, and that's all we're doing is reading and wishing and not doing anything about our immediate life and our immediate neighborhood and communities.
Yeah.
So it's really, the big step is finding that group of people with a common ground, easy to get along with, and share the goals and values with the core group, and then to go out and actually start a project. And however way you start it, just to start it. And we've seen a couple attempts over here in our area at developing that whole community concept, you know, and why they never continued on, it's hard to say. I think a lot of times people, we're so used to having somebody take charge and have a governance, so to speak.
Yeah.
Just like governance. And so even when we start a system like this, we're going to need that. We're going to need somebody that actually is taking charge, managing it all, governing it, so to speak, and then to let it evolve organically to where you don't need that so much anymore. But there is going to have to be some form of that, whether it's, you know, exchanging the currencies, holding the dollars, or setting up the Let's program on the computer system and keeping track of credits and et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to take some of that too. But again, it's the action, and then to continue on with the action, not just stop after 3 or 4 weeks or a couple meetings with a community group and saying, oh, it's not going to work out, and everybody goes their own ways again.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking this is going to, you know, we've tried this before in our little community, and why doesn't it work? And it's not like we're the only place. There's places all over the country where people have started this whole thing, and then it just fell flat on its face for various reasons.
Yeah, I've looked
and,
at
and
a lot
other
of
other places that have had success.
I've looked at a lot of cooperative business models, you know, co-ops, the co-op, the community co-op concepts, and there's been a lot of talk about that, you know, in the local community over the years, and a lot of online stuff about, you know, the Mondegreen community, you know, different cooperation models, and again, it always takes someone to spearhead it locally. I think what's happened, James, is there's largely a codependence on the system of the way it is, you know, like that's, and people default back to that, you know, that creating anything different or outside the norm, there's largely a kind of, when I say a codependence, there's people don't want to be considered out too far outside the norm, you know. Normalcy bias is, I think, is what it's called.
It gets back to that comfort zone.
Pardon?
It gets back to the comfort zone. We get in the
comfort zone. There you go. That's it.
I'm in the comfort zone right now. I got the perfect job situation. I got things lining up. It's like, what else do I need to do? You know, I'm set. I can live this lifestyle until I die. You know, that's great, but then that's just thinking about me and not about the we. And the we is everybody.
Yeah.
Know? So that's one of the things I know personally I'm working at, on is turning the me into the we.
Well, it's kind of interesting to me. You know, Pope Francis has been really kind of pushing the moral high ground with this message of comfort for the needy and discomfort for the greedy.
I like that one.
Yeah, and in other words, his message has been, you know, he's had so much, you know, conscientious, you know, messages about, you know, the moral high ground that some of the really the super rich have been writing stuff and op-ed columns about that they're not going to get their, he's not going to get, you know, their charities aren't going to get any money from them. But you know that goes on locally, yeah, as well as globally. You know, there's every community, so to speak. You know, has, you know, those with more and those with less, and that spirit of cooperation. You know, that's it works both ways. You know, and how you come into community, how you, and I think it's above all, of course, it's a spiritual thing. You know, and just as each individual, if you take it from the top, you know, it's really the moral high grounds and stepping it down spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically, are institutions, you know, from government, education, healthcare, and the economy. You know, it's stepping it down from the top, so to speak, God government rather than government God. And education of the heart, you know, education of the heart, you know, as far as, you know, mentally, you know, that we don't get much of that, but you know, it used to be understood. You know, the golden rule used to be kind of, you know, the old readers that they had for kids, you know, they cultured the understanding of the golden rule, you know, and that heart before smart, even, you know.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'd like to just share one thing with you in terms of taking action, you know, and always being in the now. And I was listening to a lecture by Eckhart Tolle, and there's my Eckhart Tolle impersonation. So what you have to do, what you have to do is have no thought between thoughts. And it's so true and so simple, and I think that's why he laughs so hard, because if you want to take action, you have to stop thinking. You just have to be now, be in the present moment, and do.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's people that got their feet in the feet on the ground, and there's people that got their head in the clouds. People with the head in the clouds sometimes... And the people with the head in the clouds sometimes get the best ideas, but they don't follow through with them. And some of the old clodbusters, you know, they're really down to earth, but they don't get the best ideas. Now, when you got your feet on the ground and head in the clouds, you know, and it's balanced, I mean, you know, it's best of both worlds. And I think that's, you know, on earth as in heaven, you know, I think maybe that's what Jesus was talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But,
yeah.
Anyway, James, we're gonna have to do a wrap. I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Mm-hmm.
And let's do this again. It's just the beginning of the year, first show of the year. I'm really glad I had you on for the first show.
All right. Well, thank you. It was a pleasure, I hope some of it made sense.
Well, by God's grace, in God's time, here's to winning from the beginning. Thanks, James.
Adios.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Catch you in a couple weeks. Happy trails. Bye-bye.
May the quickening and awakening of consciousness begin with you and your own personal evolution in higher consciousness. Thanks again for listening to Cosmic Love.